Introduce yourself, please.
I'm Marvin Klebb, Kansas House Representative, Chairman of the House Taxation Committee. I'm from the 48th District, which is in southern Overland Park.
I am especially pleased to have Marvin join us today. I'm going to tell you why right after we listen to The Open. This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka, the issues, and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. Joining Marvin and me today in the KCUR production studio, Erica Massman from Leawood, who is a small business owner, and my friend Barb Shelley from the Kansas City Star. That's still a thing, right? The Star is still a thing?
It's still a thing.
Happy to hear it. Marvin is chairman of the Kansas House Taxation Committee, as he said. So if there's ever a guy who can explain the past 120 days or so, it's Marvin. But first, we start with my two favorite questions. Tell me about your family and how you got into politics.
Well, I got into politics primarily by people calling me up and asking me if I would do it. And I'm a small businessman and had been in Topeka off and on lobbying on small business issues. And the seat happened to come up, and they were looking for someone who actually knew business issues, who had owned a business, who had employees, and knew about all those sort of concerns that business people would have. And so I finally said yes, very reluctantly. And that's how I got into politics.
And your family?
My wife died a year and a half ago from pancreatic cancer, and I have one son who's 26 and lives in L.A.
If I remember right, your son is a University of Kansas graduate?
He went to Kansas University for 2.5 years and is finishing up some schooling out in L.A.
So it's plenty warmer out there.
He seems to enjoy it.
Yeah. One of the things we hear before we get around the table, one of the things we hear is the reluctance of people when you ask how they got into politics. Well, I sort of reluctantly ran. What was it that kind of pushed you over the edge to say, yes, I want to run and I want to be in the Kansas House or the Kansas State House?
When individuals were talking to me, it did resonate that there were not a lot of business people at the time in the legislature. And I'd been over there lobbying on unemployment, workers' compensation, and those sort of issues. And I did agree that there were a number of people who didn't really know the concerns and how all those systems worked. And I thought, you know, it's probably time to get in there and contribute a little bit from a public service standpoint.
Yeah, I want to explore that a little bit later. I want to talk to you about some comments from Governor Brownback. But first, let's take our first trip around the table. Erica, I want to get your thoughts on the legislative session and get your first question for Marvin.
Well, my thoughts, not so great. I am also a business owner.
And what's your business?
We are a investment advisory firm, Index Wealth Advisors. My husband and I help regular people, retirees, people that earn W-2 income, people interested in saving for retirement. I thought the session was not so great for public education. I thought that the session was not so great for Kansas taxpayers.
Now let's unpack that. First, your thoughts on now that I suspect that you're concerned with the block grants.
I am. I'm concerned with that and how it adversely affects some school districts and not others. Mm. And I'm concerned about every child in Kansas. I think it's a national security issue.
Mm. Marvin, I think you supported block grants, did you not?
You know, I did. Virtually, I think all of the senators and representatives except three in the Northeast supported the block grant program. The superintendents from our two largest districts supported them. Johnson County has not had a good deal out of our current funding system, and it really was unfair. And it seemed like this was an opportunity to parochially get this solved and hopefully establish a new structural formula that will take care of Johnson County better. I think we all support helping children out throughout the entire state, and no one has exhibited that more than the Johnson County delegation. We've consistently voted for more funds and supporting all districts throughout the state. But we did have an opportunity for once to be concerned a little bit about Johnson County, and we went ahead and took up that opportunity to do that. And that's why I supported block grants as well.
Barb, you write a lot about education. You're concerned about it a lot. What's your thought on this? Because when I hear Marvin say, and I'm a Johnson County guy, I'm a product of the Shawnee Mission School District, so you know I want it to thrive. When you say that they when you hear that perhaps Blue Valley and Shawnee Mission weren't being treated as well as maybe they could have, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. You know, I've certainly, you know, heard from Blue Valley and Shawnee Mission that, you know, they haven't gotten a good deal from the old formula. And yet, if you look at those schools and the building they do and the opportunities those students have, they are doing pretty well. And, you know, as soon as this block grant funding went through, the superintendent at Shawnee Mission said, well, you know, we may now be able to go to full-day kindergarten without fees, which is great. But meanwhile, you had other districts around the state closing schools early, a superintendent quitting because he said his district couldn't afford him any longer. You had some pretty steep layoffs over in Kansas City, Kansas School District. And, you know, it just kind of seemed that the Johnson County schools, which weren't doing all that badly to begin with, made out pretty well, and some other districts made out less well.
Yeah, Marvin, you were clearly representing the interests of your district, but you're in leadership. You're a chairman of the Taxation Committee. And I'm always curious to hear from representatives how you balance the needs of your district, the needs and wants of your district, and all the other people in the state of Kansas who are affected by these decisions. How do you balance that?
Well, specifically, when it comes to the block grants, I might say part of that bill as well, it removed the silos, and we had hundreds of millions of dollars literally siloed up where they couldn't be used amongst the various categories of need. And we removed those barriers, and that was very helpful. There are some unencumbered funds, tens of millions throughout the entire state, if not hundreds of millions as well. And so you take a look at the overall big picture, and you make a determination. Is this an opportunity to actually make an important move forward with educational finance or with any issue in the state? And this was one of those sessions where you took a look at matters and you decided, can we advance the cause, advance some research to change the way we're doing things? You know, when you take a look at the growth of government, I think from 1996 to about 2010 or so, you know, the average growth was somewhere in that 8-9% range. In the last 5 years, it's been a little over 1% of controllable expenses. And I know that in 2012, perhaps the tax decreases were a little steep, and we know how those all came about. The Senate at the time kind of threw a curveball and wouldn't negotiate. The governor wasn't asking for those sort of steep declines in the income tax rates at the time. But it has forced us to really take a serious look at the delivery of state services and what efficiencies and levels of productivity can we have. Let's review programs. So it's been helpful from that one standpoint that it's allowed us to look at the budgetary process much more closely.
Yeah, Erica, you mentioned education. What are your thoughts about that and your question for Marvin?
Well, yeah, I was involved in the school board election, working to talk with neighbors and parents. People are really disappointed in the Blue Valley School District with the anti-public education platform that has vote after vote has been against public education. And I understand that our superintendent took a deal, took the best deal for the students and teachers in the district he is in charge of. However, we see the writing on the wall, and we're not happy.
What is that writing?
You get...
Because I want Marvin to respond to the writing, whatever it is.
Well, this move against public education, the move against, making education available for everyone and then touting performance that is based on geography. For example, in Blue Valley, I can tell you why our schools are so good. We have excellent teachers and excellent administrators, but the reason our school is so good is because of the size of the houses around the schools. If you move in any general direction to Olathe, to KCK, the houses get a little smaller, you get a little bit more poverty, and those schools are taking a hit. So our parents in Blue Valley know that if Olathe School District starts to see decline, that's our neighbor. That's not good for our students.
Right. Now, I hear what you're saying, but I want to know what the writing is on the wall. I want to know what that phrase is. What does Marvin have to respond to here? Is it the fact that you think that while Blue Valley is doing really well, other districts are struggling because of a poor population?
I don't think that Blue Valley's doing very well. I think our academic performance is great, but I think that teacher morale is very low. I think that they feel under attack. I don't feel like the school board feels that things are going very well. I think that they see challenges, like we saw in the last school board election by Tea Party and Kochback candidates. I feel that everyone in the district has a fair understanding that public education in Blue Valley is under attack.
Yeah. Try not to get too political here, so forget that whole Koch brothers and whatever she just said. But, I mean, I think there are legitimate concerns that education has taken a hit. They certainly have more flexibility. That's how they're going to be able to pay for all-day kindergarten and take away fees in Shawnee Mission. But there is, for most of the state, a concern that education is not the priority it once was in Kansas. What do you think about that, Marvin?
Well, I don't really think that is the case. I believe it's getting a second look about the funding aspect of it. And quite frankly, I'm a strong supporter of the schools, and so some of what I say is observing some comments made by my fellow legislators who maybe come across that way. But, you know, we have sort of a disconnect. A huge chunk of the money actually comes from the state as mm-hmm. a source. Mm-hmm. And we lose total control of that from the state level of how it's spent and everything like that. And there are some legislators who feel like maybe we should be taking a look at larger purchasing groups and some other efficiencies from that sort of standpoint. And I think some of that makes a whole lot of sense, quite frankly, that we ought to at least take a look at that. On the other hand, I'm a strong supporter of autonomy. And it's important that we fund all the various districts across the state, but we have some that maybe are getting $25,000 in total education per pupil, and we're not getting to spend that much. A lot of legislators look at $13,000 to $14,000 per student being invested between federal, state, and local money, and they wonder how come it can't be done for less or what are those sort of things. So I think it's legitimate to ask those questions, and I don't think it's so much an attack on public education. It's legitimate investigation going on.
You think that there are some efficiencies that can be made, districts can do a little bit better. Perhaps there's some smaller districts that can consolidate. Are you willing to go with the with a consolidation of some rural districts?
You know, I don't know that I actually support consolidation. I do believe that there may be some efficiencies of outsourcing of busing or some consolidation that way, purchasing agreements and various things like that. And some of that's being done now. And it's could that be done on a more scalable manner? But I you know, for a lot of small towns in Kansas, I certainly appreciate that the school is one of the last surviving threads that community has. And I don't think any of us are out to try to stop that school from continuing.
Right. Barb Shelley, you, I can tell that you've got something that you want to jump in
here. Chomping
at
the bit here. you know, I think a lot of the concern about schools that, Erica was just talking about is wondering, you know, what's going to happen from here on out. And, you know, people that follow what's going on in Kansas, you know, understand that, you know, you did Herculean work coming up with the tax bill this time. But that had to be done on top of some one-time measures, more borrowing from the highway fund, some creative things with the pension fund, that, really can't go on too much longer. And, you know, you really can't look at raising taxes, sales taxes and things much after that. So I think what people are worried about from here on out is, you know, is Kansas at this point a chronically underfunded state? And how does that affect education and, all other, you know, essential services?
Yeah. We have three main drivers of our budget right now that continue to cause increases. One was self-inflicted, as in this legislature and, the Governor Brownback actually decided to try to fund better CAPERS. Mm-hmm. You know, we had one of the top two or three actuarially underfunded pensions in the entire nation, and hundreds of millions of dollars more going there. Another driver that's just been tremendous has been our Social Security, our Medicaid costs, quite frankly, have just been growing at a tremendous rate, around 8% a year, if not more sometimes. And that's been around $250 million. Then the other driver has been public education as well in K-12. And I don't think people mind, legislators don't mind putting more money into it. It's the way money's getting in there. We, of course, had the $130-some million, a little under that, court equalization verdict a year ago or so. And the way the formula was set up, all of a sudden that ballooned on out to $200-some million. And, of course, most of that didn't even go to the classroom or anything. It went to equalization. So I think we should be welcoming a look at this whole school formula financing situation and see if we can fix some of this, because the taxpayers pay a lot of money into the system, and we ought to be getting more money to the classroom. And so I think it's an honorable endeavor to try to search out how we could possibly do that.
Yeah, I think the implicit in Barb's question is the sustainability of the Kansas tax structure as we move forward past 2016. You know, there were some you know, there was the scraping of the money from the highway fund, children's fund money was taken from there. How are we going to move forward so that those one-time borrowing, those one-offs, aren't going to be part of our budgetary future?
Candidly, we have to get all the legislators involved. And during this whole entire tax process, on the Senate and in the House, we had a number of legislators who did not want to be involved. They were not going to be part of the solution, and consequently, they were part of the problem. When you have, out of 125 House members, for example, we had about 68 members that we knew were going to be willing to actually vote for a tax increase. And I might add, some of those were Tea Party people. We had a number from the other side of the aisle and another group of Republicans that were not going to vote. They were concerned about the elections and being tagged as tax increasers. And so consequently, they have to get involved to be part of the solution. You talk about whether it's raising income taxes more or whatever the case may be. To come back again and ask the same 63 House members and the same 21 Senate members to craft a solution of tax increases, that's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Governor Brownback addressed that after he signed the tax legislation. I'm going to play a little clip of tape and then talk about that.
The minority party put forward no proposals to solve this issue. None. They just wanted to see it fail. And they didn't put any forward, and they just wanted to see it fail. That's their right. If they want to do that, that's okay. But they didn't put forward a single policy. You've got a number of conservatives voted for this, looking at the totality of the package. It's a tax cut, and it's movement from income taxes to consumption-based taxes. And you know, I think at the end of the day, Kansans wanted to see these issues addressed, not just somebody sit back and say, I hope it fails.
So I'm hearing you say, Marvin, that you agree with the governor, or you agree with him in a modified way. And while you're answering that, I'm going to ask Erica to pour me some more coffee.
Absolutely,
if you wouldn't mind.
I'll be happy to do that.
Well, I have two comments. One, we saw people from the far right of the legislature willing to vote for tax increases that they were ideologically very reluctant to do. All for the sake of funding Medicaid and public education, quite frankly. And they didn't want to see the system come to an end or be grossly underfunded. The other aspect that is very true, and I would use an example about what the governor just said, there has been the much discussed and somewhat maligned issue of pass-through entities not paying income taxes. And on the House side, we crafted a bill that, in fact, did propose taxes on business owners from pass-through entities, sub-S's, LLCs, sole proprietorships, et cetera. And that got 27 votes out of 125. No one stepped up to the plate, but 27 people. And on the Senate side, they ran an amendment on their floor one day virtually mirroring that same small business owner tax plan, and I think it got one vote is all. So people aren't willing to step up. They're willing to converse about it and debate and complain, and you start to have votes and being willing to get behind something. And that's what I mean by saying that if you're not going to be part of the solution, then you've become part of the problem.
Yeah, Erica, I know that. And I just want to, in full disclosure, I am one of those LLCs in Kansas on my freelance income, and I pay no income tax. But I'd be happy to write you a check before you go if we could figure out what that might be. but you also, Erica, have get that same tax break. I'd like to get your thoughts on that. You must be here to thank Representative Clinton.
Well, I'm thanking the Kansas taxpayers that are now picking up my bill. I've been very uneasy about these tax subsidies for a business like mine. When they're sold to the state of Kansas and its citizens as LLCs being job creators, I happen to believe that W-2 wage earners are also job creators. I represent and I work with everyday Kansans. These are people that are on fixed incomes. These are people that have retired from W-2 wage jobs. And it's a little disheartening that I'm sitting across the table from them and they're paying my tax bill. I think these unpaid tax liabilities should be repealed. Yeah. And I think that solves the problem.
Yeah. Is that how you look at it, that folks who are making who are wage earners in Kansas, W-2, as opposed to 1099 or people who, where the income passes through, are they picking up the burden for Erica and for a little bit for me?
Well, if anyone wanted to check the record, I was part of one of the 27 who actually voted to reinstate taxes on business owners. I do have to say, though, that the Kansas economy is doing very well at a little over 4%. We have a great economy going. The only part of the economy that's not doing so well, I guess, are revenues to the state government. And so I think that is an important key. The second part I always really do like to emphasize, and being a business owner, we pay a lot of taxes. We pay sales taxes. We pay high property taxes. So to say business owners are completely off of the rolls really is not exactly right. But I do understand the income tax argument that some talk about. And I was, again, one of the ones that voted to go ahead and reinstate it.
Barb?
I just think that this issue with the pass-through businesses and those, complete exemptions probably isn't going to go away. It's become sort of like a thorn under the saddle for a lot of people. And, unless someone can come up with some pretty good data that these businesses are actually doing their part in creating jobs, this is just going to come up year after year after year.
Or raising salaries.
Whose salaries?
the people that are working in these LLC environments. I mean, these LLCs, we talk about job creation, but what about raises, increased matching to 401ks? The LLC owners that I'm talking to or the 401ks that we manage for LLCs, I haven't been getting an influx of calls that they are wanting to increase their match on the 401ks and really trickle that money down to their employees. Actually, I'm seeing the reverse. I'm seeing companies like my husband and I own that it's just a husband-wife team, and this is happening with attorneys and doctors, and they're not hiring anyone else. Meanwhile, we're robbing all these other agencies within the state to pay for, and it's not right.
I want to get Marvin's thought about that, but I see that we're out of coffee. Anybody need more coffee?
I'm good.
No? Okay. Erica, can you help Marvin there while we – so what do you think about that, that these tax cuts, which were meant to spur job growth, really haven't played a role in a job picture in Kansas, which is – depending on who you talk to, either very robust or very awful. My guess is it's somewhere in the middle. Is your feeling that these tax cuts have really spurred job growth in Kansas?
The lack of or the level of income taxes on business owners and businesses is one of many factors that a company will take a look at when and where to expand or grow or relocate. And so I think it's a factor. Is it the sole reason? I don't necessarily think so. But I've met plenty of business owners who are, in fact, reinvesting and using that money for more equipment, for hires and this sort of thing. And one of the biggest things we need to do is have certainty. And business does not like certainty. And like Barb said, I think we're going to keep seeing this show up every year, a tax of some kind on pass-through entities and businesses. And so at some point, probably there will be a resolution that I would hope would be long-term if it's not going to be the zero income tax aspect of it.
So when you say that, so are you looking for a more moderate solution? I hate to tag it like that, but do you see a change in our tax structure, or are you committed to the sales tax?
Ideologically, there are a number of people out there, a lot of people who think that an income tax is a tax on hard work and success, and consumption taxes are more palatable. And you take a look at polls. Generally, voters are far more willing to have consumption taxes. And so consequently, it's viewed as a more favorable way to raise taxes overall by a great number of people. As we move forward, and if we run into any sort of problems in the economy that perhaps will reduce sales taxes or income taxes at all, I think there will probably be a movement underfoot to revisit this zero income tax on business owners again.
You think that's going to happen next session?
You know, no one knows exactly why, but Kansas is experiencing the same thing that most states are. Corporate income tax collections are down, the C-Corps, and we're also experiencing weaker than expected sales tax revenues. I think the plain fact is, despite a relatively decent economy right now, there is a whole lot of uncertainty out there in the business community, and even with the general population. Consequently, they're not out buying. They're not investing, and rather than what they're doing is paying down a lot of debt and saving for the future. And I know when we just got through with the Great Recession, most businesses, or a lot of them, had burned through a lot of their reserves, a lot of their capital. They were just decimated, their balance sheets, and I think a lot of them are just plain rebuilding. And even if that is the one benefit that the zero income tax has had, it's allowed business owners to rebuild their reserves. That would be a positive, I would assert. You know, at the end of the day, small business people, they will go home and eat beans, so to speak, and to keep their employees paid. and to keep them hired. Mm-hmm. Most of us, our employees, we know very well. They're friends of ours. We know them as well as we do their family almost, and we're with them longer and more longer during the day. So our employee base is very certain, and I know we in our company have really been building reserves for fear of another recession at some point.
Yeah. Marvin, I want to go back to something you said at the very beginning, and that was your reluctance to run for public office. And I'm wondering, as you sat through 113 days and being in a leadership role, and I suspect feeling additional pressure with that, was that kind of your fear when you were weighing whether or not you should become a member of the Kansas legislature, whether you could actually get people of good faith to get together and make good public policy?
I haven't researched it, but I would rather guess that between the Senate and the House, we have more business people with real businesses, with employees and a number of them and assets, you know, manufacturing or whatever the case may be, construction, you name it, than almost at any given single period of time. For all of those business people, it's a tremendous sacrifice, and one of the sacrifices happens to be that all of a sudden you're out in the public eye, and it's not quite frankly something that I relish, and I know just about all the business people I know don't either. They're out to try to do a good job, create good public policy, and at the end of the day, you know, we're only one vote. And so whatever we cobble together, whether it's a budget plan or a tax plan or whatever, plain fact is we don't really own it because we only have one vote. But what we can do is try to help craft the direction. And at the end of the day with this tax plan here, what it was to get a number of different factions together, a number of individuals, to actually say that supporting public education, providing the necessary support for Medicaid and the elderly and the poor was more important than sitting here and not raising taxes. And so sometimes that's the most major contribution you can have is trying to get all sides to come together.
But I want to go back to a little bit more specific and ask that sort of balkanization, right? I mean, as I watched the legislature, at some points it sort of felt to me like I was watching, you know, all these different factions from like the Israeli parliament, right? All these like little sub parties that you can't even figure out who they are. But so, you know, I mean, business people are used to getting stuff done, right? That you make a decision, you move forward. And I guess what I'm asking is this frustration and a little bit of heartache? Is this, you know, is that what you were fearing when you thought, well, I don't know if whether or not I should jump into the public eye?
Well, we've certainly become involved, most of us who are business people in the legislature, during some of the toughest times, coming out of tremendous recession,
right?
Decimated state revenues. You know, we have not had any of the real fun necessarily of getting to create new programs and have people associate us with all of those sort of things. Right. We've had really hard work to do. And so consequently, you know, it is tough. And I would say between last year and this year, whether it was the budget process or whether this year was a tax plan, basically business people have been in the chair, vice chair positions on the key committees. They've been in the leadership of the House as well and the Senate. And I think that's been really a fortunate situation that we're used to handling bad problems, trying to get people to gel and come together to solve problems, and it's worked out well.
All right, we got to wrap it up here. We're going to take one more trip around the table. Barb Shelley, your final thought or question for Marvin?
I guess just a final thought is that, you know, the governor, you know, announced some accomplishments of the session, and they're all pretty controversial things. He named the gun bill, the welfare bill, moving local elections. Be nice to see the Kansas legislature, you know, work on something that's not quite – that draws more Kansans in and is not quite so polarizing. But things like that usually take money, and that's the problem. Right.
Marvin, I want to hear your response to that.
You know, it does take money to do more. And we instead the last few years had to focus on efficiencies and productivity with the programs we do have. And we've probably come a long ways in those regards. In some of those social issues, you know, not everybody agrees with them. And for myself, I go up there to talk about jobs creation and a good environment for our citizens to make a good living. And some of these others are a little more peripheral as mm-hmm. far as my focus goes, but they're important to a lot of other people, and I certainly understand why they are.
Erica, your final thought or question?
I'd like to see Kansas be fiscally responsible. I'd like to see us stop borrowing money and to pay our bills. And I would like to know what solutions you have for next year. I think we have another $400 million we need to come up with and what your plans are.
Not a bad final question. So we are starting, you are going to start next session a little bit in the hole. So where do you start?
If everything works out, which is certainly questionable, we do have a good chance that we'll end up with a positive ending balance next year. We shouldn't have any $400 million holes to have to fill. If sales taxes end up coming in weaker, if somehow we have a hiccup in the economy at all and our W-2 taxes come in and corporate ends up being slower, we will have a little bit of an issue that we have to deal with. It will not be the catastrophic situation that we've had this year. All that being said, if we have to go back to the revenue side, that's not going to be easy in an election year. And I go back again and say it is going to take folks on the other side of the aisle and all the Republicans that didn't get involved this year. We need 125 in the House and 40 in the Senate to be involved, just not 21 and 68 or 70 to be part of the solution.
You know, it was a really good question, but I think I'm going to take the final question here. We're still not in balance for next for the next budget. The governor is looking at cutting about $48 million now. He line-item vetoed a couple of million from the that the regents offered up. So your advice to the administration about where they can look to make those cuts?
I don't know where, but I would address when. And the when is now. And he needs to be getting on things right away and determining how we could possibly save more. And I think an important thing we did in the legislature, we actually appropriated some money to get some outside eyes in here, some consultants to go in our agencies and start looking for efficiencies and productivity levels. Again, we've held the controllable expenses to just 1% growth since about 2011. That's pretty remarkable. We're down now to what structural issues are there that we could address.
Well, we've got 22 days about left in this fiscal year, so I'm hearing you say, Governor Brownback, now is the time to make these decisions. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
It is, and I know that they are looking very hard and very seriously what solutions they can come up to from an expenditure standpoint.
All right. We had some very human moments in here in this podcast mm-hmm. today, and I appreciate all of you for sharing. Erica Massman from Leawood, thank you. My friend Barb Shelley from the Kansas City Star, thank you. The program is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to Statehouse Blend on iTunes. Find us at kcur.org/statehouseblend. Our friends over there at UpToDate, they clear out a little bit of room for us Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Marvin, are you on the Twitter?
I am. I'm not big into social media.
I didn't know. Yeah.
It's part of the business side of me. I prefer to stay lower key.
Well, if you are a Twitter fan, what give us your handle. How can we follow you on Twitter?
You can't.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's one of those. Well, you know what? I like being followed on Twitter. You can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff. Marvin, to get to know you just a little bit better, we're going to close the program with your favorite song. What might it be?
You know, I've been in the legislature so long I can't even think about songs. So I'll just pass on that one right now.
All right, we're going to go around the table, and this is my favorite part. Now we're going to hear from Erica and Barb, and I will choose Erica.
Oh gosh, do you have a song?
I think today my favorite song is "Badlands" by Bruce Springsteen.
That's a great one.
The Boss, I love it.
Yeah.
That's Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. I'll see you next time.